Welcome to the Scuttlebutt Radio Program with your hosts, Tom Claxton and Cal Walters. Radio for veterans by veterans. To get on the line, call 343-0106 now. A show for veterans by veterans.
Good evening, and thank you for joining us on the Scuttlebutt Network radio program, the voice of the veterans for the veterans, on 106.5 FM and firing the shots heard around the world at scuttlebuttnetwork.com. You're on board with Cal Walters and Tom Claxton, both veterans of the United States Marine Corps, and we welcome you to the most important and entertaining show on the radio each week as we tackle the issues and concerns vital to the welfare of our nation's most neglected asset, the United States military veteran. And we've got an outstanding show coming up for you tonight, but first I want to thank some of the sponsors that help make the show possible.
We certainly do. We'd like to thank the battleship USS Alabama Memorial Park, Viva Medicare of Alabama, the law firm of Gardberg and Kimberly, Ed's Seafood Shed, the official sponsor of Tom's Tirade, one of our new sponsors, Patriot Roofing, and Serenity Funeral Homes and Gardens.
And we want to thank all of our sponsors, and of course, you are great listeners. We could not do this without your support, so please let them know that you heard it on the Scuttlebutt. And remember, the show is all about giving our veterans a voice on the issues that are important to them. So you can always join in the discussion at 343-0106 or 866-983-2777. You can also catch us on the TuneIn app for your smartphones at FM Talk 106.5. And you can also, if you'd like to listen on demand, we do have podcasts of our regularly aired shows are up on most of the major podcasting sites. And if you like to listen to Tom's tirade on demand, you can catch out some of his tirades at castbox.com. So plenty of listening on demand opportunities there if you're into the podcast. And as always, check us out on Facebook. You can follow me on Twitter. It's at Cal_SBN, and we do have a packed show for you tonight, so if we can't get to everything, you can always check out the stack at scuttlebuttnetwork.com for more information on the topics of the day. Later on the show, we'll be joined by Nathan Gulen from the law firm of Gardberg and Kimberly. He's going to tackle some of the legal issues facing our veterans today. From what I understand, he's got 7 or 8 pages worth of stuff, so you can just go ahead and get your pen and pencil out. We'll have a quiz at the end.
Yep, he got his notes. You still there, Cal?
Yes, we lost him.
I guess we lost him. He'll call. He should be able to call right back. But Nate, as he said, Nathan Gwynn's with us here tonight, and he has numerous topics that he's going to bring to our attention of our listeners out there tonight, all of our bets, and see if we can get maybe a few things answered, a few questions squared away, and see how all that works. He's a very knowledgeable young lawyer, and just, you know, it's a blessing to have him on board here with us. I'll tell you what, let me see. But we'll also give you details on what is at stake to keep the consumer protections in place for the military members. The leader of the THEVA, T-H-E-V-A, Electronic Health Records Project. Have you ever heard of that, Nathan?
What's it called?
THEVA Electronic Health Records Project abruptly resigns. The leader of the VA, that's what it is. The leader of the VA Electronic Health Records Project has abruptly resigned. And there is also more trouble ahead for the VA. We'll talk about that, and we certainly want to remember our veteran and our hero, Brother John McCain. I tell you, POW for 5.5 years and in Congress for all these years. But you don't want to overlook our tirade. My tirade tonight on law means law. I enjoyed getting that one ready, so you should need to, you know, check it out. But first, less than a month into his term as VA Secretary, Robert Wilkie is pledging to craft a new mission for the beleaguered agency in customer service. So I don't know what happened to Brother Cal. Let's see if he hadn't called back in. We're just going to have to, you know, let some air, dead air go here, because I need to get in touch, back in touch with him, see what the hell's going on. But we're trying a new, we got a new project going here, guys, so if y'all bear with us, we're just trying to work through it and get this new project on board. So if we can get that working, let's see if we got him back on the air. Cal, you on board with us?
No, this not Cal. This Joe Abdullah.
All right, hold on, Joe. We're trying to get Cal back on the line here. All right. Let me see. It would be the night that I lost my information on the stack on my computer, so it is what it is.
This is actually a secret announcer test.
It's done a damn good job of it, too, isn't it? You know?
But, see if you're ready for prime time.
Nathan, what are some of the subjects that we're going to be able to talk with you about here tonight while we're waiting to go to our break?
We're going to talk a little bit about a new decision that came out from the Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims that's going to open the door for veterans to file class action suits against the VA.
What?
Rather than kind of go at it alone. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. We're also going to talk about some mistakes that the VA made. I'm sure everyone's surprised that the VA
didn't make mistakes. The VA doesn't make mistakes, son. Come
yeah, well, regarding some military sexual trauma claims and some mishandling of those. And then we're also going to talk about the RAMP program. I'm sure a lot of you have been getting letters about the RAMP program and not really sure what it means. So we're going to go over what it means for you, what your options are, and kind of what the implications of it are for you so you know what to do with your claim as you keep moving forward in your process against the VA.
Do we have some new things that have come up about some of these areas that you're going to talk about? And we'll do that in the next segment after we go to a break. But what are some of the things?
I'm back, Tom.
You're back? All right, Big Daddy.
Yeah. Hey, sorry about that. So talking about the fact that the VA secretary is saying that they're going to now shift the focus at the VA to customer service with the focus on the veterans. And you have to wonder if he's coming out and admitting this, where have they gone, where, you know, down what rabbit hole have they gone they've been doing? And he's stressing this coordination with the DOD, in that they've said that the DOD and the VA is going to be joined at the hip on electronic records. Interesting little side story, Tom.
I'm glad they joined with that somewhere.
Well, yeah, but here's the story off Stars and Stripes, Tom. The person who was selected to lead a multi-billion-dollar overhaul of the Department of Veterans Affairs electronic health records resigned last Friday, only a month after taking the job.
What in the news on what that deal is?
The gentleman, Genevieve Morris, who'd been selected to head the program, and it's a female, but apparently she has said that there were differences with the leadership at the VA, and went in her resignation letter, went on to say, quote, "Over the last few weeks, it has become clear to me that VA's leadership intends to take the electronic health record modernization in a different direction than we were headed. Since my service as chief health information officer was always intended to be an interim solution, I'm offering my resignation to the administration effective immediately." Wilkie has named a new leader for the project, John Windham, who had worked with Morris as the executive director of that office. But it raised some questions for those in Congress who were supposed to be overseeing this, And I think the vacancies and the turnover is leading Congress. I think they're asking questions about it, how this money is being spent and if the VA is going to be able to meet the deadlines that they put for themselves. And especially when you have Wilkie coming out and openly talking about the health records and the electronic programs with the DOD, it does, you know, might cause some folks to scratch their head and wonder exactly what might be going on and if the VA is going to be able to get the program up and running and working for our veterans, which is ultimately what they want to do. But anyway, on the other side of the break, we'll talk with Nathan Gwing from the law firm of Gardberg and Kimmerly. As always, you can always check out the stack for more information at scuttlebuttnetwork.com. We'll talk with Nathan when we return on the other side of the break to the Scuttlebutt Network.
I am Gunnery Sergeant Hartman, your senior drill instructor. From now on, you will speak only when spoken to. And the first and last words out of your filthy sewers will be, sir. Do you maggots understand that?
Sir, yes, sir.
Can't hear you. Sound off like you got a pair.
Sir, yes, sir.
It's Scuttlebutt Radio with your hosts, Tom Claxton and Cal Walters. Radio for veterans by veterans. To get on the line, call 343-0106 now.
Welcome back to the Scuttlebutt Network Radio program, the voice of the veterans for the veterans. Transmitting live on 106.5 FM and firing the shots heard around the world at scuttlebuttnetwork.com. Our number is 343-0106 or 866-983-2777 to join in the discussion. You can also catch us on the TuneIn app for your smartphone at FM Talk 106.5. Check us out on Facebook. You can also follow me on Twitter. It's at Cal_SBN. And it is a privilege to be joined by one of the C lawyers from the law firm of Gardberg and Kimberly. Nathan, pronounce your last name because I know I butcher it every time.
It's Guin.
Guin. And it should be very
simple. Don't
worry,
Cal. I have butchered it.
It's well, all good.
Tom,
I've heard
you butchered
much
a lot
worse,
of
sure.
The English language.
No, I told you know I talked to him over at his office, and they make sure that he gets his payroll, even though we can't pronounce his name. So he doesn't care.
Well,
that's
yes.
True. I don't have any issue with that. So it's all good.
Well, Nathan, it's great to have you back with us. You always come with a tremendous amount of information that is very helpful for our veterans. And actually, there's a story that we can kick off with that Tom and I discussed last week. And that is the VA, an Inspector General report from the VA that has basically comes out and claims that the VA is wrongly denying benefits to the victims of military sexual trauma. Tell us a little bit about it from your point of view.
So basically, I guess I read in the story as well, about a quarter of the claims for military sexual trauma that were denied in the fiscal year 2017 were wrongly denied for a number of different reasons. Either they didn't have enough follow-up, they didn't have any kind of medical examination. There are a number of different duties that the VA had that they were supposed to take, steps they needed to take to try to develop the case in favor of the veteran, as they're under a duty to do in every case, but especially in a military sexual trauma case. And they just simply failed to do that, whether it was due to, you know, a lack of caring or a lack of training or whatever it may be. They just simply kind of dropped the ball in this case.
Well, it almost seems like I know they went back to, well, we need to train people better, that the folks that were reviewing the claims and denying them may not have had the training that they felt like they needed. But the VA denying claims before requesting medical exams, that to me seems like that would be a pretty obvious wrong way to go about it.
Yeah, that's what we would call, I guess, around the office is a duty to assist violation. So if there is a claim and you have a current diagnosis, or if there's basically, you know, you have treatment records that show a particular disability or conditions being treated, and there's, you know, sufficient evidence to show that there could be a connection to your period of service, they're under a duty to get a medical examination to try to develop that part of the case for you and try to develop a nexus statement is what we call it, which is basically a link between whatever it is that's going on with you, whether it be physical or mental ailments, and your period of service. And they're under a duty to develop that for veterans. Oftentimes, they develop it in a negative way, which, you know, that's kind of a different issue all on its own, but they are supposed to do it nonetheless, and they didn't do that in a number of these cases. In about half the cases that they wrongfully denied, they didn't do a medical exam at all.
And so for the veterans who had the claims denied, are they their only option at that point is to appeal that decision and then get into the backlog there?
Basically, you know, and a lot of times when you get denied for that, you think to yourself, a lot of them are confused. You know, you don't know why you've been denied because you have a valid claim, and, you know, why would they deny a valid claim? And then you don't really know how to, you know, navigate the appeals process because you don't know what you need to give them. At that point, you feel like you've given them everything you can so that you can get the benefits that you feel like you're entitled to, and they deny your claim, and you're sitting there thinking, you know, what else could I give them? So you're really kind of left wondering what to do. And really without a lot of answers and without a lot of help from the VA to kind of point you in the right direction. So, yeah, they're left to appeal. And that, you know, these days is kind of a proposition of waiting 2 years or so for a decision to come back in a lot of cases. So it's just not a really a great way to have to go forward with it.
Now, one of the other things that was mentioned in the story as something that would contribute to the validity of the claim, and it's something that you might be able to speak to, but they talked about the fact that VA representatives overlooked evidence of possible stressors that could help prove sexual trauma. One was significant weight gain after the sexual assault. Another
I think we've lost connection again.
We have.
I think where Cal was going with that, if you don't mind, is he was talking about different ways that the VA used to be, or they would have people who were specially trained, and they've stopped doing that. They discontinued that in 2016, where they specially trained people to look for different stressors or markers of military sexual trauma. In this particular story, there were issues with weight gain. A lot of times job performance would decline, or if there'd be behavior issues, things that you wouldn't necessarily think to look for, that would be a red flag for someone who's specially trained to look for things like that, especially if you have an alleged time that the assault occurred, and then you look, you know, at the time immediately after that. If you see weight gain, you see, you know, job performance going down, a lot of different things like that can really indicate that there's something wrong going on.
Well, in one of the things that I see it in the report too, Nathan, is that they have an instance where a lady was sexually attacked, and she was became pregnant from it, had the child, and it moved forward all with it. Then her claim was denied, even though she became pregnant in service, had it in the hospital there, and her claim was denied. And the denial was vague language used by the examiner. Sella, hello.
Yeah, that one was pretty incredible.
You know, how do you make a pregnancy and have a baby call? Is that vague?
Well, everything else was apparently lined up exactly with what they told them, and then it was the VA examiner's language that they basically relied on to deny the claim, which is just incredible. So I don't know how you kind of get to that conclusion, but it's troublesome. It's worrying at the least.
Then you have another example of a veteran here that received psychiatric treatment at private hospitals because of his military sexual trauma, and then the VA denied his claim without attempting to even obtain his medical records.
Yeah, and that would fall under the same duty to assist as they would to get a medical report. If you tell them that you've been getting treatment from outside facilities, they're under a duty to order those records. And they have the ability to do those and obtain those records with your permission, obviously. So that's something that they're obligated to do and would be a violation on the VA's part.
It is just unbelievable. Then we have other veterans at the VA that received the other psychiatric treatment. But then they were denied the benefits before the VA contacted them by phone or even sent letters requesting information about their alleged assaults. I mean, you know, it's kind of like, what's going on? It just sounds more like damn negligence. Excuse my French.
No, I mean, you're right. It seems like a lot of different things that shouldn't be, that should be kind of an easy thing to do, an easy step to take, like reaching out to him just to ask what happened and get some additional information. Things like that, just simple things aren't being done. And that's, you know, a lack of training. I don't know if that accounts for all of that, you know, but that's just a lot of things that aren't getting followed up on, and a lot of claims that are just not being handled correctly.
It's really unbelievable. Cal, you back with us?
Technology, it's you get the good side and the downside. But there's one note in the story, Nathan, that if you look, the Inspector General has asked the VA to review the claims, and that they're going to review, and they'd complete that review by September 30th of 2019. So are these veterans kind of in limbo waiting for the VA to review this, or can they just go ahead and file the appeal?
Well, you know, my advice would be if they have a decision to go ahead and file the appeal regardless of what the VA tells them, because, you know, if something doesn't work out or if they don't do what they're supposed to do, you need to be able to protect your effective date. And so basically when you put in a claim for the VA for benefits, then your date of your claim is going to end up being what's probably going to be your effective date if you're granted the benefit. And if you don't have appeals going forward and you miss your deadline, then that previous denial will become final. And if it becomes final, then you have to put in a new claim, and then your original effective date would be essentially ruined. So you could be, you know, missing out on a lot of back pay. So my advice would always be to make sure your appeals are timely. Even if they do tell you that they're going to reevaluate the claim, I would go ahead and just protect myself and my effective date and do that.
Okay. So don't sit back and wait for what the VA is going to tell you at this point. Be proactive. Get with somebody like you or Colin at your firm, and let you guide them and use your expertise to assist them through the process.
Yeah, we'd be more than happy to do that. If anyone has any claims that they feel like they need help with and they don't really know where to turn, that's what we're there for, and that's what we do all day, every day. That's what we're here for them.
Great. Well, we will have more with Nathan from the law firm of Gardberg and Kimmerly when we return to the Scuttlebutt.
It's Scuttlebutt Radio with your hosts, Tom Claxton and Cal Walters. Radio for veterans by veterans. To get on the line, call 343-0106 now.
And welcome back, and thank you for joining us tonight on the Scuttlebutt Network radio program. A voice of the veterans for the veterans on 106.5 FM and firing the shots for around the world at scuttlebuttnetwork.com. I'm Cal Walters here with Tom Claxton. We're glad that you've joined us to discuss the issues facing our veterans today. Our number is 343-0106 or 866-983-2777 to join in the discussion. You can check us out on Facebook. You can also follow me on Twitter. It's at Cal_SBN. And if you'd like to listen on demand, our regularly aired programs are available via podcast on most of the major podcasting sites. You can also catch Tom's tirade via podcast at castbox.com. And before we move on, we want to thank some of the sponsors that help keep us on the air.
We certainly do. We want to thank the folks that help make the show possible. The battleship USS Alabama Memorial Park, our sea lawyer Colin Kimmerly at the law firm of Gardberg and Kimmerly, and Viva Medicare of Alabama, Patriot Roofing and Serenity Funeral Homes and Gardens.
And again, we are talking tonight with one of our sea lawyers from Gardberg and Kimmerly, Mr. Nathan Guin from the law firm of guard bird. And Kimberly, we got to get you got to get your last name in that list at some point, Nathan.
We're working on it. We're working on it every day.
Great. Well,
I wrote it in crayon when I was over there the other day, but they didn't like that.
Did you take some spray paint and you were going to put his name on the sign?
Oh, hell yeah.
They always stir up trouble somewhere, Tom.
Oh, why not?
Gotta have fun
somewhere.
yeah, prior to the break, we were talking to Nathan about the appeals process with the military sexual trauma cases. An interesting development in this Monk v. Wilkie case from the U.S. Court of Veterans Appeals that could really impact how legal cases against the VA are handled. Tell us a little bit about it, Nathan.
Yeah, so basically in Monk v. Wilkie, the eight justice panel decided that that veterans are going to be able to bring class action suits against the VA, so you'll be able to certify as a class as you would in most civil courts that you can do, you know, around the country. In a traditional court, in this case, it'd be more of an administrative situation. But they are going to allow that. In this case, they didn't certify the class, but I can understand why, given the theory behind the class in this case, where Mr. Monk basically asserted that all veterans faced lengthy appeals processes, so they all should be able to band together against the VA. So I can understand why they wouldn't want to certify every veteran who has a claim against the VA as a class, but it is good. It opens the door for that in the future, so we'll kind of have to see where that goes.
Well, in that regard, do you feel like that they maybe will take an additional effort now to clean up some more of these cases and get some more answers on them, knowing the fact that they could later get a class action lawsuit?
I certainly hope so. I mean, hopefully it'll breed positive things and get people decisions more quickly, and positive decisions that are going to really benefit them, and they can get the benefits that they're entitled to. But it's good to know that if they keep with the standard patterns and practice that they have now of long delays and keeping people waiting, then they'll have a different course of action they can take that wasn't there previously. So it really should empower the veterans, even if the VA doesn't take the action that they should to clear out some cases and get the decisions back quickly. It should at least give the veterans the power to do something about it a little bit, with more of a team rather than doing it by themselves.
Well, in that regard, Cal, don't you think that's really another check and balance that we haven't had as vets with VA claims, so that there is something hanging over their head to make them want to take a little bit more initiative in getting their job done?
Well, I certainly think that's an aspect to it, Tom. One thing that immediately pops into my head are the veterans who say they have an illness or injury from the burn pits in Iraq and Afghanistan. And that has kind of been one of those instances where the VA has pushed it to the back burner, and they've done the burn pit registry, and they say we're reviewing it, and kind of the song and dance that they've given veterans on many other fronts. But if this would allow a legal avenue that could let groups of veterans that have a similar illness come together and file as a class action, I think there's some weight that gives the veterans in their battle against the VA. I don't know exactly how that would affect, or how Nathan and Colin, how they would be able to fit into that process. But I think it certainly gives the veterans a stronger voice there.
Well, I think it just gives us a little bit of ammo in our ammo can that we haven't had.
Well, certainly. I think if you, it's the veterans to a certain extent already have this class action concept, because, again, if you are an atomic veteran, or you were an Agent Orange veteran, or burn pits, or Gulf War illness, you're kind of working as a group anyway, because the VA has to examine all of the cases that are there. But if you have this threat of legal action in a class action, it might prompt the VA to move with a little more speed in addressing some of the issues and concerns of our veterans.
At least we get some initiative that they need to be doing their job, and they've got somebody with an oversight on it.
Right. And, you know, I agree with Nathan in the fact that in this case, the judges rejected the claim that all veterans who face lengthy wait times should be able to collect sue the department. I mean, I think that's just part of the process that we have with the number of claims that are there and the system that's in place. It's not as if these veterans aren't getting their claims processed. It's just that there is a delay, and there's a mechanism to compensate them for that delay, because as Nathan was talking about, make sure you have that initial date, file date, you want to keep that so that they have to go back and pay you all the way to when you initially filed.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think, that, you know, in this case, like we said, when you talked about the burn pits, that's exactly the kind of things that I'm thinking of. Burn pits, things that aren't, you know, every veteran who's facing a long wait time, but people who have similar illnesses. You know, another thing that comes to mind are veterans that served during the Vietnam War era but weren't in Vietnam. They were in Thailand or other areas that there was Agent Orange exposure. And, you know, that it was being used, that they could kind of band together and maybe have a class action for that group of veterans with that similar type to kind of get an end-all be-all, maybe make it a presumptive if you were in Thailand, you know, that you get Agent Orange exposure and you get the presumptive illnesses that go along with that. So we'll see what it comes with. We'll have to see what kind of mechanisms they provide. All that is yet to be determined, so we'll kind of have to see how they want to set it up, if it's going to look similar to, you know, the traditional class action suits that you see in regular civil courts, or if it's going to be kind of a breed all of its own. But we'll just kind of have to see how it plays out, you know, in the coming months and years.
You know, they say you can't sue the government, but maybe changing.
Yeah, maybe so. It seems like it. It's a step in the right direction nonetheless.
Well, speaking of in the right direction, you know, the prior story that we talked about with the military sexual trauma and the claims being denied, you said you absolutely think that those veterans should appeal, not wait for VA to come around. And you mentioned that, you know, that initial filing date. But when you mention appeal, we've talked about it here on SBN. You know, the VA was getting a bad rap because they had such a backlog in the initial. And they burned the midnight oil, and they locked all of the representatives in. They didn't let them go home. They put dependents on them, and they just had to figure out how they were going to decide those initial claims. And they did, and of course, what that did, that caused the initial backlog to go away. But now that backlog is in the appeals process, and a lot of our veterans are stuck there. What's a little more alarming is the VA has come out with programs, RAMP program. And they're really pushing veterans to try to get into that program. But you say that may not be the best route.
Yeah, so we've really done a lot of research on the RAMP program and what RAMP stands for, if you're not familiar with it. And by this point, I think that most veterans are, because they've been sending more and more letters to more and more veterans each month. But it stands for the Rapid Appeals Modernization Program. And essentially what's going to happen is that in February of 2019, the VA is going to start implementing a new system of appeals. So instead of the traditional system where all the claims are in the same line, so to speak, you'll have different tracks that you can pick from. There'll be three different processes. But before they get to that point, they have the RAMP program right now, and they're sending out letters asking veterans to opt into it. Essentially what you're doing if you opt into the RAMP program is you are pulling out all of your claims from the what they call the legacy process, which is a traditional process that's used now, and you're throwing them into the RAMP process. And they promise to get you a decision, I believe, in like 120 days or something crazy like that. And apparently they will, but a lot of times there are denials, and also your appeal processes are kind of limited from that point in time. You can't take your claim directly to the Board of Veterans Appeals after that particular decision is made. You can't even get to the board until February of 2019. There's really not going to be any action taken on your case until 2019 because, you know, they haven't implemented the new system all the way. It really is just kind of seems like a ploy to get a lot of cases out of the way and kind of pass. It seems like it might just create another logjam down the road, depending on how many people opt into it. We've been advising our clients, our veterans, not to opt into it because we don't find it to be very veteran friendly. And we're really monitoring really closely to see, you know, if that changes, then we'll obviously let people know. But right now, it doesn't seem to be the best, you know, the best course of action for our veterans. So I wanted to make sure that we talked about that tonight so that, you know, you don't have to opt into it. The only way that you can get in the RANT program is to opt into it. You don't have to opt out. So if you get a letter in the mail and you don't want to opt in, just throw it away and nothing else will happen with your claim. So just wanted to let people know kind of what that means if they get those letters. And if they have any questions, they can obviously call our office and we can explain it a little bit better to them if they need it.
And so you mentioned the date. At that date, I think you said February 19th, is everybody getting dumped into that program or at that time, or can you stay with the appeals process that you have?
So my understanding of it as it stands right now is that you'll be able to be grandfathered in. So if you want to stay in the legacy process, my understanding is that you'll be able to, but all claims that kind of start after February 2019, they'll all be processed under the new system is what they've told us. Now, they may push the rollback back, but we're not really, you know, as far as I know, February 2019 is the launch date.
Great. Well, Nathan, we appreciate you being with us. Where can folks go to get in touch with you or get more information?
They can go to www.gardberglaw.com. That's GARDBERGlaw.com or 251-343-1111. They can give us a call there.
Great. Nathan, we appreciate you being here with us, and we look forward to having you back again soon.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks for all the hard work you do for our veterans. Hey, on the other side of the break, Tom's tirade on law means law, all that and more when we return to the Scuttlebutt Network.
The brave men of the Green Beret.
The following may not necessarily represent the views or opinions of this station, but they're coming around.
What is your major malfunction?
And now, the original pork-eating crusader,
Mr. Tom Claxton.
With just a few weeks left in her Air Force career, Captain Mary Bell Jarzabek decided to vent a little. She posted a few messages on a U.S. Senator's Facebook page supporting the lawmakers' push to overhaul the military justice system for sexual assault cases. Not long afterward, and not surprisingly, Jar Jar received an email from a higher-ranking officer informing her that she was under criminal investigation. The allegations? That she had wrongfully advocated, quote, a partisan political cause and expressed opinions online that could undermine public confidence in the Air Force. Now, Jar Jar is a military lawyer, so you might think that she has pretty good grasp of the UCMJ. Of course, your community organizer in chief, Obama, is a constitutional lawyer, and you see where that has gotten us. Anyway, Captain Jar Jar is assigned as part of a new program to represent victims of sexual assault. Although the Defense Department has promoted the program as a success story and part of a broader campaign to crack down on sex crimes within the armed forces, Jar Jar had grown disillusioned and said she felt that the Air Force was papering over deeper problems. Quote, changes are needed, and it's time that the public knew about the military's true dirty little secrets. She wrote December the 2nd in a long comment posted on the Facebook page of Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, Democrat from New York. Unfortunately for Jar Jar, under military regulations, uniformed personnel are prohibited from publicly participating in overt political causes. For instance, appearing at a rally in uniform or endorsing a candidate is forbidden. And in her Facebook post, Jar Jar identified herself as an active duty Air Force lawyer, which apparently is what drew the attention of her superiors and prompted the investigation. On December the 23rd, after a brief investigation, Jar Jar said she was notified by the investigating officer that she had been found guilty of the allegation. However, the punishment was decidedly mild. She was given verbal counseling, or a warning not to do it again. And although the outcome won't appear as a black mark on her official military record, Jar Jar called the investigation a thinly veiled attempt to retaliate against her for advocating too strongly for sexual assault victims. Or maybe someone in the chain of command was actually following the damn rules. In an interview, she also questioned the timing, noting that her departure from the service was imminent. After a 5-year career, she is out of the Air Force. Quote, I told the truth, said Jar Jar, 34, who was stationed at Ramstein Air Base in Germany. I do believe they are trying to silence me and also send a message to other special victim counsels who agree with me but are afraid to speak up. Hey, here's a thought. Why not wait until you get out of the damn military before you start your career as a lobbyist? I am certain that Princess Gillibrand from New York would be more than happy to have you on her staff to parade around the halls of Congress, once prowled by the likes of true lady killer Ted Kennedy. What a bunch of crap.
Air Force Colonel Christine Kajic, the investigating officer who upheld the allegations against Jar Jar, did not respond to an email seeking comment. Wait, the investigating officer who did her damn job was a woman? That must have really pissed off the progressives trying to transform America one law at a time. Lieutenant Colonel Christopher Kearns, an Air Force spokesman at the Pentagon, said he could not discuss details of Jar Jar's case because of privacy restrictions. What the hell, privacy restrictions? Hell, she put it on Facebook. That's about as private as Michelle Antoinette Obama's trips to Target. In a statement, Kearns said the Air Force is strongly committed to combating sexual assault and has actively listened to feedback and suggestions concerning military justice improvements. He said any Air Force members who, like Jar Jar, believe that they have been retaliated against have the right to file a complaint with the Defense Department's Inspector General. Jar Jar said she decided not to go that route because such cases typically go nowhere. Wow. So starts the social justice transformation into the military justice system. You heard it here first on SBN, but back to the story. The military's record of investigating and prosecuting sexually assault cases has been a sensitive subject for some at the Pentagon and on Capitol Hill. Some members of Congress and the COIC, Barack Obama, have demanded reforms amid a surge in reported, and I emphasize reported, incidents of rape and sexual abuse. As we have highlighted here and has been verified by civilian DOD employees working with sexual assaults in the military, the percentage of sexual assaults in the military is equal to or below that in the general population. So why all the fuss? PR for Obama and some in Congress? Disclaimer, one real sexual assault in the military is one too many, and the damn perverted creep needs to be sentenced to Gitmo. Hey, maybe OB might go for that. Even though most military lawyers don't file charges, as opposed to the military commanders in question, because of the lack of evidence necessary to secure a conviction, military commanders, under political pressure, have adopted a host of administrative and legal changes and have made clear to their troops that the issue is a top priority. But some lawmakers have been pressing for more radical changes. Foremost has been a bill introduced by Gillibrand that would strip commanders of the authority to oversee investigations into sexual assaults and other serious crimes, giving those powers to uniformed prosecutors. Pentagon lawyers have lobbied heavily against her proposal, saying it would undermine commanders and diminish their ability to maintain order and discipline. Gillibrand's measure in March failed to clear a procedural hurdle. Gillibrand has been pushing for another vote in early December when Jar Jar posted her supportive comments on the senator's Facebook page. Quote, I admire her bravery in speaking her mind because I have heard from many other active duty service members who have encouraged me privately to keep moving forward but are afraid to say it publicly out of fear of retribution or retaliation, Gillibrand said in a written statement. I think the message being sent here is very clear. Unless you are going to toe the company line, shut up, or we will punish you. Wow. Gillibrand should know how that feels as a member of Harry Reid's Senate. That notwithstanding, Jar Jar violated the UCMJ, and she is now trying to hide behind both her gender and the non-existent scourge of sexual assault in the military in order to deflect attention from her lawbreaking post. And while she is entitled to her First Amendment right to speak, she is not entitled to disregard the rules that she has sworn to uphold. For the Scuttlebutt Network, this is Tom Claxton. And by the way, that is a privilege left for the ass wagons in Congress and the White House. Just figure it out. It's common sense.
Where's your drill sergeant, man?
Hold up, sir!
Hold up, sir!
So am I to understand that you men completed your training on your own?
That's the fact, Jack!
These are exactly the kind of men I want working on the Scuttlebutt Network.
And welcome back to the Scuttlebutt Network radio program, a voice of the veterans for the veterans on 106.5 FM and streaming live on ScuttlebuttNetwork.com along with Tom Claxton. I'm Cal Walters, a couple of Marines with just a little bit to say, the First Amendment right to say it, and the fighting spirit to keep it, and pull that tirade because you were talking about the claims for right. military sexual trauma right. that had been denied. But it's interesting to see here we are, I think, about 4 years later on the career of Senator Gillibrand and where she is looking to position herself with suddenly this is not the cause celeb for them, and they've moved on to other things. However, most Americans know that we have lost Senator John McCain. He lost his battle with brain cancer, and in particular heroic fashion, he fought and fought and fought right up until the end. But there was a story on military.com under the radar, and the question was, will Americans remember John McCain as a hero? And I thought it was interesting that on military.com that question would be raised. And McCain obviously was a POW, served as a senator. He was also one of the five United States senators accused of corruption in 1989 as part of the Keep Five. So it'll be interesting to see how he is remembered and what his legacy is. But that's going to bring us to the close of tonight's edition of the Scuttlebutt Network radio program, the voice of the veterans for the veterans. We thank you for joining us. Hopefully you'll join us again soon. Until then, please keep our warriors in your prayers, especially those in harm's way. God be with them and their families. God bless America. Remember, hero is not a four-letter word. We'll catch you on the other side.
Hoorah.